Okay, I'll go back to Sally and Dee.
Back to Deirdre. We're, handful of other issues, and she's going to step us through them.
Going back to the presentation, I'm going to start with slide 19. We finished the first two goals of the amendment. Now we're up to the third one, which again is a combination of five overall objectives within the third goal, measures to adjust other specific aspects of the FMP to make it more effective. There's considering revising the overfishing definition, specific adjustments to the limited access general category IFQ program, measures to address the EFH closed areas if the Amendment 2 EFH amendment is delayed, improve research set-aside program, and consider changing the fishing year to May 1st. The committee reviewed these sections again in general. They only have two motions related to the general category section. All the others, there are no, luckily, additional motions that we have to consider to further clarify these alternatives. So I'm just going to do one slide per issue to remind you of what the alternatives in the amendment are, and then we'll identify those two clarifying issues that the committee was still working on last week to then be included in the final amendment. So very quickly, the overfishing definition. As I said, there's no committee motions, or they did not identify any of the alternatives as preferred. So there would be three options that would go to the public: a no action, which would continue to use a spatially averaged overfishing definition, including areas that are open, closed, and within access areas. The Amendment 10 modified definition was considered in Amendment 10 and not selected. It has been worked on since then, slightly modified. And the big difference is that it's a time-averaged approach by area rather than a completely spatially averaged approach. And then we do have a hybrid overfishing definition alternative, which was developed by the PDT after we brought the overfishing definition information to the SSC. Based on the SSC comments, we came up with this hybrid approach, which basically uses the F threshold from the no action alternative. The SSC had concerns about basically having an F threshold that changed year to year and the problems associated with that. So instead, this would be a hybrid approach that would have an F threshold that would stay at one place, but you would have an F target that would change year to year based on the areas that were available to the scallop fishery. Again, there's no preferred alternative. There's no outstanding issues with these three. If nothing happens today, all three would go out to the public basically on even footing. Minor adjustments to the LAGC IFQ program. There's originally in our scoping document, I believe we identified four specific issues we wanted to consider in this amendment that got expanded a little bit during development. Now there are six overall sections to be included related to the IFQ program. The first four were in the scoping document based on public input we had during the priorities discussion to allow an IFQ carryover of up to 15%. Currently, in Amendment 11, there's no carryover provision. The second one would be to consider a specific sector application. The council was notified there was interest from a particular group to form a sector. If you recall, the sector requested certain exemptions to the scallop plan, and those were rejected by the council. And because those exemptions were rejected, this sector is no longer interested in applying. So at the last committee meeting, there is a motion to formally move this to the considered and rejected section. And instead, this group is more in favor of implementing a process to approve community fishing associations in light of the council not approving some of the exemptions that were originally sought from the sector. So that number two bullet has kind of morphed into this number six. The third one would be to modify the possession limit. In Amendment 11, it was clarified the possession limit would stay the same at 400 pounds per trip for general category IFQ qualifiers. There's an alternative in this document to consider up to 1,000 pounds for these vessels, and there's also an alternative with no limit on possession. All three of these will stay in the document. The committee does not have a preferred alternative identified. I have to go back in my notes and check about the advisors. They had a motion. I just have to remember what happened with that. Modify maximum quota one vessel can own. This came up that there are actually two ownership cap type of measures in the IFQ program. One is an individual-based one that you cannot own more than 5% of the total IFQ in the fishery. And there's a second one that no individual vessel platform can have more than 2% of the IFQ. So the public explained to the council that by having two, it, you know, each person would have to have two vessels, which would equal 4%, but then the question under consideration was, could we increase this to 2.5%? So then one individual could have two vessels, basically with half of their individual limit on each. This was a request, so both would be considered, the no action of 2% per platform and the 2.5% option per platform. The next bullet is came up a little bit later in the process. This, I believe, came actually from the council level, to consider an alternative to allow limited access general category quota to be split from the permit. This came up as an issue in terms of a lot of concerns complications that there's a bunch of basically IFQ that's stuck on vessels that really have no intention of using it, or it's too expensive to buy up those small amounts of quota because you have to stack all the other permits with it. So this essentially would allow an individual to sell their quota but keep their limited access general category permit with no quota attached to it. But the idea there would be that in the future they could then purchase quota to use that permit with. And the last one is to consider implementing a process to approve community fishing associations. This was a motion directly from the council at the last meeting asking the PDT and committee to further develop, and that is what we've done over the summer, and we brought it to the advisors as well. So we do have an updated alternative for you to consider on this subject. Those are all of the general category issues currently under consideration in the amendment. The next topic is the EFH issue. It's clear now that Amendment 2 to the Omnibus EFH Amendment is delayed. So in that event, we decided to have an alternative in this amendment that would address the fact that there are two sets of EFH closures that apply to the scallop fishery under Amendment 10 as well as Amendment 13. This amendment is considering modifying that to make the areas just the Amendment 13 boundaries, which, if you remember, was considered in a framework, but ended up not working out that way because it is something that should not be considered in a framework and we should have done it in an amendment. So both areas still apply to the scallop fishery. Measures to improve the research set-aside program. Again, there are no specific committee motions related to this, and no preferred alternatives were identified. I'm not going to go through all of these. They're really pretty small in nature, except for a few. There are 11 alternatives overall. In general, they have to do with the timing of the announcements for the research set-aside applications and some other issues about exactly what the amounts should be based on in terms of a percentage or a poundage. Should it be multi-year announcements instead of annual announcements, which we do now, those types of things. Several of them have become a little outdated over the last year because the agency has changed how they run these announcements. For example, there's an alternative in the document that says it should come out earlier. This, in a sense, has already happened. The agency has adjusted the time that they set out these announcements. So some of these, to be honest, aren't really very relative anymore because adjustments have been made over the course of the development of this amendment. The last issue is changing the fishing year to May 1st. Again, there's no committee motions to modify this, and there's no preferred that were identified at the last two meetings. There's the no-action alternative to keep it at March 1 and the alternative to change it to May 1st. A lot of questions have come up, why do we keep considering this? And certainly all of the same rationales in terms of the perspectives of the PDT remain. The reason it was decided by the council to include it in this amendment again is because in light of these new ACL requirements that we never had to consider before, primarily how it is affected by the groundfish plan and the overlap with at least the yellowtail stocks for now. Okay, so that's the remainder of all the alternatives in the document. I'm going to go back to the committee motions. Again, there's only two, well, there are five motions, again, bundled into two for you today, related to a couple clarifying points about the general category section. The first one would be related to sectors. I already mentioned this. We have gotten oral testimony from the group interested in originally becoming a sector that they are no longer interested, so we could formally move that to the considered and rejected section of the document. It's pretty quick, hopefully. The second bundled set of motions is including three different motions that occurred at the committee level related to community fishing associations. And one of them is just basically to include it in the document officially. We actually did that twice because we did it first, and then we made a bunch of changes, so we did it again. The second motion, there was definitely some confusion and concern about some of the specific aspects of the original alternative, so the committee wanted to clarify a few points, and the second motion includes those issues. They wanted to limit the accumulation that a CFA could hold to 5% of IFQ, which is the same as the individual ownership restriction. There were some original options of 10% or 20%, and people felt until we knew more about these and saw how they worked, we'd rather be more precautionary. So that was at 5%. There also was the idea of having a section to allow for a new entry. People that did not qualify under Amendment 11 could potentially later through these CFAs lease quota and enter the general category fishery. People were a little concerned about this at the committee level since we just went through an amendment to limit So people were concerned about that, so there was actually clarification to not approve the section about new entry at this time anyway. The last part would be to limit the harvesting of any CFA to LAGC permit holders only. This was more of a clarification. Some people were confused about it. And the last point, again, same issue there, that it would apply that this grouping of pooling of allocation, again, is only for the IFQ and the general category fishery and not anything with the regular limited access days at sea and access area fishery. So those are the two committee motions bundled. When we get through these, we have actually gotten through all of the committee motions related to Amendment 15 adjustments.
I have a motion on behalf of the committee relating to the sector proposal Deirdre just went over. I would move that the sector application be moved to considered and rejected section of the document. This passed the committee on a vote of 6-0-1. Committee motion, and again, this is coming forward based on the proponents of that application who no longer wish to pursue it.
Committee motion, discussion? Anyone in the audience? Back to the council. Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Unanimous.
Next, I have a bundled motions, committee motions relating to community fishing associations, which, again, this was something that the council asked the committee to consider over the summer, and we had two rounds of discussion on this. The motions are, I would move to retain the Community Fishing Association alternative in Amendment 15. This passed by a vote of 4-2-1. Second in this bundle is I would move to limit accumulation by a CFA to 5% of the general category IFQ allocation, delete the new entry option, and limit harvesting of CFA-held quota to general category permit holders. This passed by a vote of 7-0-0. And lastly, clarify that community fishing associations would apply to general category permits and quota only. This passed by a vote of 8-0-0. There was quite a bit of discussion on this, as I mentioned, especially the second part of this motion kind of gets to some of the specifics that the committee did discuss. I know that the service had additional questions about how this is going to function. Overall, the committee wanted to keep this in, allow for continued development of this as an alternative while kind of specifying the parameters, the size of a potential CFA more clearly in terms of membership participation and the scale of a CFA as this whole concept gets up and running. So I don't know if the service has any further discussion on some of the issues that were raised during the committee. I know that there were some things that were left unresolved at the last meeting.
Well, first I want to say I support the concept. The agency supports the concept in general and want to commend this D and the PDT and the committee for all the work they've done. There's a really good baseline and framework to start from in defining how these CFAs would work. But we do, I think we need to think about, for example, how long it took to design sectors for the groundfish fishery and the kinds of questions that we needed to answer and the level of details that we needed to get into. And I think we need to do that as well for the CFAs before they're a viable option for inclusion in the amendment. I know that Pete and Hannah and Dee sat down, I think it was earlier this week, to go through some of the issues. And I think, you know, skipping ahead in the slides, I think this is actually later in the presentation on page 20. So I don't know. I'm happy to wait till then and we can just talk about where we are and what the next steps are, if that makes sense.
Terry.
Yeah, thanks. Sally, on the third measure there on clarifying the CFAs would apply to limit access general category permits, was there any committee discussion on inclusion of the Northern Gulf of Maine permits?
Not that I recall.
All right. So without that direct discussion, I would make a motion to amend to include Northern Gulf of Maine permits in the third measure.
D.
Just want to, it's been several months. The original motion that was sent to the committee from the council to work on this, you did discuss this at the full council level, whether to include Northern Gulf of Maine permits or not. We went back and forth. Ultimately, the final motion from the council did include recognition that it would only be LAGC permits and quota only, and the reason being that it's the only fishery that has a quota to really pool anything together with. In terms of the Northern Gulf of Maine permits, it's more of an access right to a hard tack. But in terms of being in a CFA, you know, there wouldn't be any quota, and those vessels are not permitted to, you know, it's different fisheries. So the directive from the council was not to do this.
Nonetheless, it's a hard tack. Right now, that's 70,000 pounds. There is a recruitment of scallops coming to Northern Gulf of Maine. We have a limited pool of vessels, and I hope I get a second.
there a second? Seconded by Mary Beth. Discussion. Mark.
I just have a question for Terry. Terry, is it your intent that Northern Gulf of Maine permit holders be allowed to harvest CFA-held limited access general category quota?
My intent is to allow a Northern Gulf of Maine permit to be entered into a CFA so that the CFA could allow that use of the hard tack between their members. And as Pat said, we have a lot of work in the development of what CFAs are and what they're going to mean to the scallop fishery and whether and how it's applicable to the ground fishery. It's just, to me, it's a vehicle to move it into the process at this time before it's lost in the dust.
Anyone else in the council? David?
Yeah, I'm a little bit confused here, Terry. I mean, how practically would this work? I mean, anybody can harvest that has a Northern Gulf of Maine permit can harvest that whatever that quota is. It's going to change over time. How? I mean, it isn't. I don't see how it can be tied up into a CFA or something. It's open to everybody that's got a Northern Gulf of Maine permit. It's different from the limited access general category that is an individual boat quota, and an individual could lease it on an individual basis. You got to explain this to
sure,
me.
Sure. The Northern Gulf of Maine permit is a 200-pound per day up to the overall quota of, at this point, 70,000 pounds. You've got your access to it and want to share it with somebody else in the community based of fishing association, it should be the ability of the association to transfer it between its different members. It's no different. The Northern Gulf of Maine permit is limited access as well. I mean, there was a qualification period in time. We have a discrete number of people qualified, and I don't know what the number is. It's somewhere around about 150 out of a potential population of close to 550 folks that could have qualified. We're not going to get any more if we can take some of these permits transfer them from, for instance, into Glenn's hometown in Port Clyde and allow them to be and allow access to this very small amount of scallops that we're looking to nurture in the Northern Gulf of Maine. I think that's good for the state of Maine, good for the fishermen. And the other two states, yours included, that share in this program.
Well, I got to ask Pat, maybe I'm mistaken, but I mean, as an example, I have a 40-pound possession permit that's also limited access, and I thought once a year I could switch that to a Northern Gulf of Maine if I wanted to when you renew your scallop permit. Mm-hmm. I don't think I was locked in forever and ever to the 40 pounds.
No, you can switch your permit once a year.
So that's my point. This is essentially an open access permit to anybody that's got the 40-pound permit. So I think it's different than what Terry thinks it is. That's what I'm trying to get out here, and that's why I think we have an issue here. Now, you could remand it back to the committee to discuss it, but I don't think we can do this today.
Glenn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The reason for any of this CFA, a permit banking, that we've talked about amongst ourselves in our communities is for the future. Now, imagine if the resource in the Northern Gulf of Maine got big. The permits might be out of reach of some fishermen. I think this may be a way to secure them. There is a lot of work that's going to need to be done to make this into something that people can really understand, but it might be a good first step to allow this securing of the access for the future.
Pat.
Yeah, I guess I'm confused too. I support the concept of community fishing associations, permit banking, and those types of things, but I'm having the same problem. I don't see how it works in this situation. There's nothing to hold, per se, besides the permit itself, and the permits are freely transferable. So I don't see how it works. And so I guess, you know, I'm going to oppose the motion, not because I oppose the concept, but because I already think there's too much in this document for the council to wrap their minds around and do a good job with in the time that's available. And I think this just adds a complication that will make it difficult for everyone.
Anyone else? Go to the audience on the motion to amend. Ron?
Ron Smolowitz, Fishery Survival Fund. At the committee, we spoke against the entire incorporation of this into the amendment, as it's going to drag it down, and this is a perfect example. I mean, have to be against this motion. This is the tail wagging the dog. We got a huge industry here that we need to move forward, and this is so far from developed, and the complications, we're going to be spending hours and hours and hours of discussion, and this amendment's going to be delayed and delayed and delayed, and for what? For nothing. The risk here, and you'll all start noticing it, is this could introduce an unlimited number of new players into the limited access general category fleet. There's absolutely no limit on how many communities could form these associations and all be out there competing against the limited access general category permit holders for permits. This is going to be a disaster. Conceptually, it might be great, but it's so far from being developed. The only consequence here is dragging down Amendment 15. And this is a perfect example of what's going to happen. So please take this whole concept out of the amendment, develop it outside through whatever public process or grant process or what have you, and come back at some later date. We cannot afford to kill this fishery by dragging it on with this added nonsense. Thank you.
Tom.
Tom Nepsey, Cape Cod Commercial Hook Fishermen's Association. I find it pretty surprising that the very brief discussion we've had here this afternoon so far and on this idea relative to other items in this amendment could be construed as bearing it down. The council staff has assured me that this regulation and this portion of the amendment does not require analysis sufficient to delay this amendment at all. I've sat through the entire day, as I've sat through other committee meetings, and so have we all, about the permit stacking and leasing and destacking. We've talked that around quite a bit. This is a good idea. It has been developed. It's been developed well with work from the council staff, the committee members, and other folks. As Pat alluded to, I think there are some finer points that need to be ironed out. But I also don't think any of those points are deal breakers. I think we can do this work. I think it's an important step. To the issue of the Northern Gulf of Maine permits, I share the reservations of Dave Gaethel. I'm not sure how that works, but I think it's worth considering. But fundamentally, I think that we can wrap our heads around this, and I don't think it'll delay this amendment. And I hope the council continues to support it.
Anyone else? It's Jim Kendall.
Jim Kendall, New Bedford Seafood Consulting. I agree with Ron Smolowitz on the point that he says that this is basically an afterthought for the people that are dealing with it, maybe not for the people who planned it out. But it's thrown in as a rider, just like any rider into some sort of legislative action at the last minute, intended to get in there just by virtue of waiting it down. I seriously doubt if there's been any studies or any work done on economic impacts to the fishing industry by allowing the opportunity of someone from an outside community, in this case probably an environmental community, coming in and buying up fishing quotas. It's happened in other fisheries, and apparently it's become a method of de rigueur for them. If you can't beat them down, then you buy them out. And you've got plenty of people who are willing to sell out the other fishermen as long as they feel they're going to survive. And if that is the case, then I think this really demands a full study in using an economic and socio-economic impact statement, or review of this, and let that go out to the public to see what the actual cause and effect of this would be. Thank you. Therefore, I don't support it going in, even as part of a public hearing document, because I don't think you have the information to provide the public. Thanks again.
Bob?
Yes, thank you, Bob Maxwell. I find this to be difficult to accept in Amendment 15 going through the process. As we came through Amendment 11, which took a long time to get to that point, we still haven't completed it as a whole yet. We're waiting to go into the IFQ end of it. And I think that if we allow a CFA, something of this nature into this gamma right now, we haven't even had the opportunity to have the IFQ get up and rolling to see what the outcome is going to be. And I believe that this opens Pandora's box to participants that aren't even in the fishery. And where it would go from there, I don't know. I think Ron pretty much summed it up. But I would hope that the committee and the council at least give the participants that are in the fishery right now, which is it's a hard fishery, just the way that it's going right now. I think that we've been discredited the way that the whole Amendment 11 and everything has come down. It's a very, I don't know how to put it, but it's just, I don't know, I'll just leave it at that point. But I just don't think that we're going to have the time to go through this. I'm an advisor, and we also shot this down at the advisor meeting, and I just think that we could spend our time more on focusing on the bigger issues on this Amendment 15. Thank you.
Okay, back to the council. The motion to amend, Mary Beth.
Just on the more general discussion of the CFAs, if we are to move forward, then I certainly do support the motion to amend. And the one thing is that, you know, technically a CFA can form with or without the council's blessing. So it could be looked at in a variety of ways. I mean, this would be an opportunity for the council to have input on CFAs, which people can already do now. So I think that's a benefit for us as a council. As far as the time, you know, constraints we're operating under here, I mean, clearly the agency said this is not fleshed out well enough, so it needs more work. And I can't really picture us doing all that work here today at this hour of the day, and taking it out to public hearing. I mean, what's our opportunity to spend a little more time on this in answering some, you know, the questions the agency has and what's lacking here? Does anybody have any idea on that?
Dee?
It's a little later in the presentation, but Pat mentioned it before. Yes, I sat down with the agency, was it yesterday? Tuesday. And we went through about a dozen points about the CFA section that need to be clarified. I would say the majority of them are small things that are really not even worth mentioning to the full council, but I do have a slide of four or five things that are a little larger. In talking back and forth with them, I feel pretty comfortable that we came up with some solutions to those concerns at our staff meeting, and I was going to present to you what those four or five things are, and depending how things went and if this was included, we would clarify those things after this meeting and include it in the public hearing document that goes to the agency. And I would explain what the four or five things are, tell you what we plan to do about them, and include it that way so we wouldn't have any future committee meetings about it or things like that.
Anyone else in the council? Ready for the question on the motion to amend? All those in favor, raise your hand. Three. Opposed? Nine. Okay, we're back on the main motion. Anything further? Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Eleven. Opposed? One. Abstentions? Motion carries 11-1. So, D?
I think that finishes all of the bundled committee motions, and the next plan was to return back to the presentation. So that basically covered clarifying or cleaning up, whatever you want to call it, the measures that exist in the document. The next thing the committee did was look at the analyses provided for the document and identify preferred alternatives. We didn't have a lot of time to get through the analyses, obviously, because we were still doing a lot of work with the development based on all those motions that we just went through. So I was going to take a few slides per subject, explain the analyses in general, and present the committee motions on preferred alternatives, and then the full council could decide if they agree with those committee motions as preferred or if you have additional motions to make to identify preferred alternatives. But at that point, this would be the opportunity to raise any preferred alternatives for any of the subjects. And ultimately, the final motion would be to approve the amendment for the public hearing process. So coming back to slide 29, summary of the Amendment 15 analyses. Again, the analyses are all in Document 9 by subject. And 9B is a table of all the different alternatives and a summary of the different analyses broken out by ecological impacts in terms of the scallop resource, EFH, protected resources, and then a column for the economic and social impacts on fishing communities is the far column to the right. So that one hopefully highlights the kind of key messages that the analyses support within the EIS, and you can refer to before making recommendations about preferred alternatives. So, again, I'm going to just present these in three overall subjects. First, ACLs, then the stacking and leasing objective, and then the other measures one at a time. So one slide about the ACL analyses. You know, this is a pretty qualitative type of approach, but in general, in theory, it makes sense that ACLs and accountability measures should help prevent overfishing. Of course, many of our measures to date have also done that, but by having to put everything in black and white and including accountability measures that are some proactive and some reactive, the argument is that you will ultimately have beneficial impacts on the resource by preventing overfishing, as well as having beneficial long-term yields increases from preventing overfishing, which in turn has higher revenue for the fishery. So that's sort of in a nutshell pretty what you would expect in terms of just implementing ACLs and AMs in general. In terms of the ACTs, again, at the end of the day, the way this FMP is working, the ACTs are most likely where we're going to allocate, what we're going to allocate to the fisheries are going to be pretty consistent with what we've been doing in this FMP. So as long as the final actual allocations are not very different in scope in terms of, let's say, a percentage reduction from OFL from what we've been doing, we really don't expect big changes in impacts to the fishery. It's not as though these buffers are going to be some huge amount more than the buffers we haven't called them that, but we have had buffers in this fishery all along. We are expecting some pretty substantial effort shifts from the yellowtail accountability measures. And with effort shifts in this fishery in particular, we would expect some negative impacts on the scallop resource and the fishery. This fishery is very area specific, and when you have an area that we end up wanting to send the fishery to and we can't because of an accountability measure and we have to send the fishery somewhere else, you will have a higher impact on F, and that is expected in the analyses for many of the yellowtail alternatives. You also, it will take you longer to catch the same amount of catch, so your costs to fish will go up. So we are expecting some derby impacts, some economic impacts on the fishery from the yellowtail AMs, and if, in fact, some of the closures or the areas, if there are some limits in the north and that shifts some effort down to the south, we could have some issues with turtles and shifting effort that should have occurred in the Georges Bank and shifting it to mid-Atlantic. There are some concerns raised in the document on that fact. So very quickly, that's a summary, I would say, of the major points that come up in the analyses related to the ACL and AM sections. Again, there were no committee motions on the ACL section of the document. In general, there really are not a lot of alternatives in this section except for the buffers for ACTs. Remember, we have two for each fishery. Again, they're not completely defined, so identifying preferred this option at this point might be a little early. And there are the yellowtail AMs. That's really the only other section that has options that you could identify preferred alternatives for. But again, that discussion's pretty difficult too. That's all for ACLs.
Just to clarify, the reason that the committee doesn't have a large number of preferred is simply a time constraint. We may have considered more preferred to bring to recommend to the committee, but we just didn't have the time. That said, the advice I think that, or the guidance that Deirdre just provided as far as the places in the ACL provisions where there might be a choice to make, I don't know that the committee would have done that even if we had had the time. As we discussed, the yellowtail AMs, there wasn't something that was clear rising to the top, and there's going to be, hopefully further analysis, especially looking at a finer scale in terms of the potential to close areas where there's a high yellowtail abundance. And it may be premature to do something on the ACT buffers. But if it's the will of the council, I don't have anything to bring to the council on this in terms of preferred, but if anyone else has something, the time is now.
Seeing none, Sally?
Back to Deirdre then for the next section of the analysis.
Goal two, I have two slides of a summary of the analyses related to the stacking and leasing alternatives. Again, they're summarized in document 9B. As you would imagine, the economic and social impact section of the capacity-related measures is quite thick. This is where the PVT has spent majority of its time analyzing in terms of specific scenarios and examples and so forth. It's really quite complete. We have a full economic analysis of the different alternatives. The social impact section is divided into three parts. One is an overall discussion of the expected impacts on the fishing communities by alternative, and then there's a detailed literature review that was mentioned by some of the speakers before, which the SSC recommended that we do. And it's a detailed literature review of some of the potential impacts of consolidation. It's focused on IFQs because that's really where most of the research related to consolidation has happened in the past. So it looks at probably close to 100 different papers about different IFQ programs in the country as well as internationally, looking at, impacts of consolidation on different aspects of fishing communities. We do draw some conclusions about potential similar effects of stacking and leasing in the scallop fishery. We do try to include discussion that, of course, because we have ownership cap restrictions and things in this fishery that some of the other IFQ fisheries have not had, and, of course, this is not an IFQ fishery, completely, there certainly cannot be direct comparisons, but there's certainly a lot of recent articles as well included in there, and that's part of the social impact analyses. There's another section the committee recently got a report on, which is an economic model of the social impacts on shoreside businesses, not just the fishing businesses, but the ice plants and the fuel companies and the welders and so forth, all vessel support businesses on the shore. And we've looked at the impacts of several stacking and leasing scenarios on those types of businesses and what it would mean for the economy and the region overall. And, you know, for better or worse, there's concerns with all of the data, of course, but in general, we brought it to the advisors. We went over it with the committee, and the assumptions used are reasonable, I would say, in general. And it does give you a picture of what we expect the job losses to be, for example, under different stacking scenarios. If you stack 50% of the vessels versus 20% of the vessels, things like that, it shows you an estimate of crew loss, and on the other side of it, increased profits, increased producer surplus and issues like that in the regional economy, increased income, things like that. So that's all described in the document. Again, hopefully during the public hearing process, we'll spend a little more time explaining that and what those results are. But they are going to be included in the final social impact analysis section. So very generally, when you reduce excess capacity, you would increase technical efficiency of the fishery, which would include reducing costs, increasing profits, and producer surplus. You would likely reduce congestion at docks if some vessels are scrapped. You would reduce fuel and electrical waste associated with those platforms and the maintenance costs. It's also been argued you could possibly increase safety if effort is ultimately moved on to newer vessels. So under some of those analyses I was just explaining before, we have a maximum stacking scenario. Again, we don't think this is what's going to happen, but this is sort of our maximum level of stacking. We assume that basically half of the fleet stacks onto the other half. Again, of course, we don't expect that to happen, but it helps give us a sort of worst-case scenario in terms of impacts. Overall, the fixed cost associated with vessels is estimated to decline 24% under that scenario. Trip costs are expected to decline 6%, and overall profits for those platforms would go up 26 to 30%. So that's, again, a maximum. If you have less amounts of stacking, all of those would decline. This did help us get a view into the adjustments, and if no adjustments, that's the fishing power adjustments are made. We do argue in the document it could adversely affect vessels that do not stack. Clearly, the analyses support that there are risks to increased catch, and if you do not apply any adjustments, that would have negative impacts on the vessels that do not stack, because as it's been mentioned, if you catch more in the future, there will have to be cutbacks fleet-wide across the board later. Again, the literature review does highlight some of the potential negative social impacts from consolidation. Again, this would be on a bit more limited scale in this case because of other constraints in the scallop fishery. In terms of the job losses expected, again, under that maximum scenario that I was talking about, which again isn't what we expect, but there would be somewhere in the ballpark of 250 job losses from that type of scenario, which would be mostly related to scallop crews and manufacturing industries that directly support vessels in our fishing ports. There would be some increases in jobs in other industries, such as service industries and working in hotels and so forth in the region, things like that. But when you even those things out in the end, it comes out to something in the ballpark of 250. Again, in that maximum, so we would expect something less than this, of course, in our region from the amount of stacking that we've been hearing about. So that's a summary. Again, I'm not trying to rush through it. But at this point, we don't have to, you know, we're not picking measures at this point. We want to get the information out to the public and have a little more time to go through it. But there are some committee motions related to the stacking and leasing section of the document. They're up on the board. They are related, but pretty involved. So my recommendation would be to take them actually one at a time if you decide to agree with the committee and identify preferred alternatives. The committee did identify that both of the stacking and leasing alternatives would be identified as preferred for this amendment. The vote was 3-2-1. There was another motion to identify for preferred that the fishing power adjustments for stacking and leasing be identified as preferred. That's the one that would be flexible for all vessels, but you would have the two-prong adjustment. That one vote went 6-0-1. There was another one to identify permit stacking as to allow destacking, I'm sorry, as preferred, but that motion failed. I included it here because these were all the motions related to preferreds. And the last one also failed for lack of a second. The committee did attempt to identify a preferred in terms of whether you should be allowed to lease from CPH or not, and that one also failed. So really there's only two motions from the committee in terms of identifying preferreds on the whole range of options under stacking and leasing.
Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, before we get to the specific motions, I'd like to ask Deidre to go back to the previous slide, which shows capacity and efficiency analyses. That's it, right? The fourth bullet, some job losses expected in fishing and manufacturing industries, a maximum of 250. I assume that that's the estimate under the maximum stacking scenario? Okay. Under the maximum, okay. Did the some job losses, did the plant, was the plant development team in a position to provide some estimate of the extent to which, or the percentage of, what you mentioned 250, that was primarily crew, I think you said. If it's primarily crew, what percentage of total crew within the fleet would this represent?
I have the number of expected total crew, if you just give me a second to try to find it for the fleet. There's a section in the document that goes through all of the sections. Demet, if you know it offhand, please jump up. David, just while I'm looking, tables 47 and 48 of the main analyses document in much more detail go through the different employment sections and describe the different changes in jobs that we expect under these different scenarios. And the total number of crew is estimated. Let me just look for it and I'll respond. Yep, the under status quo, 1,068 crew in the fishery. And that would be reduced to, under the maximum stacking, to 851. So you would lose 212 crew jobs, again, if half of the fleet disappeared. And the reason it's not, you know, half is that we made an assumption that three-quarters of the vessels in this fishery already share crew. And we discussed that with the advisors, and that was decided upon as a reasonable assumption to make because many, many vessels, from what you've heard, they don't fish year-round, and they do. There is quite a bit of crew sharing that goes on already. And three-quarters was, you know, of course, in some ports it's more, in some ports it's less. But in general, it was a reasonable assumption to make that three-quarters of them are already sharing crew.
Okay, it's not a clarification. If a vessel owner, well, if someone owns more than one vessel, and then they stack permits, they've taken permits off of permit off of one vessel, put it on the other vessel. The one that has no scarlet permit now still has permits for other fisheries, correct? Okay, they have not. They cannot.
You have to stack all permits. All permits have to be stacked. You can't just take the scallop permit. So that vessel would not be able to go and increase its efforts in other fisheries under stacking. Under leasing, it's a little different.
Okay, so we're back to that list of motions, right? There were two from the committee. Sally?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd move on behalf of the committee then to identify both stacking and leasing alternatives as preferred for Section 3.3, which is measures to address excess capacity in the limited access fishery and provide more flexibility for efficient utilization of the resource. This motion carried by vote of 3-2-1. Committee motion.
David?
Yeah, I want to ask procedurally, I would like to go with no preferred alternatives in this entire section, and I want to know procedurally how to proceed to get that up here.
You vote on it.
All right.
Do I make a motion to substitute, or do we just
substitute that there are no preferred alternatives?
Okay, then I would make a motion to substitute that the council has no preferred alternatives for capacity and efficiency measures.
There's a second. Seconded by Terry Stockwell. Discussion on the motion to substitute. Sally.
Yeah, I mean, the committee spent a great deal of time on this section. It was the second issue that was given by the council to the committee to develop as in terms of a priority for this fishery, addressing capacity. And you know, it was a fairly close vote. We didn't have a full complement of the committee when the vote was taken. So, you know, I don't know how it would have gone otherwise. It was a close vote, but you know, my feeling was that this was something that was good to bring forward, and it was fully consistent with the direction that the council had given to the committee a year and a half ago when the need was identified to reduce capacity in the fishery. So with that, I will oppose this motion. Thank you.
All right, Beth.
I'm going to oppose the motion pretty much for the same reasons that Sally just outlined. It is the second priority for the amendment. These are the only measures that address that priority, and I'm opposed to the motion.
Terry?
I've heard a wide range of opinion today and prior to this meeting. I'm sure we will over the next couple months. The 3-2-1 vote is not convincing to me, and for that, I don't have a preferred alternative. I'd like to see it go out and see. Here it comes back.
Anyone else on the motion to substitute? Go to the audience. Yes, sir.
My name is Eric Hansen. I own a single scalloper. Don't have the option to consolidate. And right now, this goal of Amendment 15 is to address capacity and efficiency. Capacity is already addressed with effort controls. There's no need to go any further with that. That's the whole rationale behind our regulations. Now, the capacity reduction right now is just kind of a smokescreen to save on capital investments. It's not really addressing capacity at all. I'd like to see it move. This move to consider but rejected. Thank you.
Steve. I'd ask people that want to speak to come up to the front in the front row here so we don't have to wait for you to walk up. Thanks.
Sorry, I was so slow. I'll move quicker next time. Mr. Chairman, it's this old age thing. I don't know what's going on. Mr. Chairman, members of the council, obviously, my small independent business owners are concerned about the specter of consolidation and where it places them in the fishery. As you will recall, decisions were made 15 years ago to discourage this type of consolidation and maintain a fleet of basically smaller businesses, I don't want to say smaller vessels, smaller businesses in kind of the family business concept, but allow some expansion and allow people to gain up to 5% control over the fishery. What we're seeing here, there's nothing in here that's capacity reduction. It's flexibility. It allows owners, and flexibility is fine. It allows owners some, this is supposed to, we hear, reduce capacity. All it does is it allows larger owners' flexibility to become more efficient, move their fishing effort from two vessels to a larger, more efficient vessel. Actually, larger is inconsequential, more efficient. And we know that there are ways through increasing power, through addition of quart nozzles, through modifications to engines. Tonnage issues have kind of gone by the wayside as people have found ways to avoid them in their upgrades, and the end result is you are going to see an increase in efficiency. And what also concerns these individual or small business owners is that you have already given some owners the ability to own up to 5% of the fishery. That's fine. But as you allow them to consolidate and concentrate their position in this fishery, it really creates some stark inequities. Under the current financial model that was prepared for the council, a vessel owner with 16 vessels, through the efficiencies in this proposed amendment, could take his profits from $3.8 million to $4.9 million. The difficulty is two things. One, some of that is going to come at the cost, at cost to the other members of the fleet. And two, it really gives larger businesses a much stronger hold, not only of the scallop fishery, but of the secondary markets, as more and more of these businesses have become vertically integrated. The economic analysis that is now contained within the plan documents kind of spells out, and maybe this is the most pessimistic view, but basically the conclusion is the primary social impacts that have been documented in empirical cases involving consolidation range from employment loss, decreased income, decreased quality of life, changing relations of production, structural disadvantages to smaller vessels and firms, dependency and debt patronage, concentration of capital and market power, inequitable gains, regulatory stickiness, reduced stewardship, decreased community stability, loss of cultural values, and so on. And that should be of particular concern to this council. This is a public resource. Efficiency, I hadn't heard Andy Rosenberg's line that maybe efficiency isn't a good thing, but in some cases it's not. And employment is an important aspect of the fishery, and I think that when you're balancing jobs against owners' profit in a fishery that by all accounts now is very profitable, you need to be very careful. I also note that even as this is ongoing, we're seeing vessels being constructed where owners are already planning on the ability to expand their vessels and jumboize them, add as many as a recent owner put accommodations for 13 crew members on a newly constructed scalloper, anticipating some type of a change. And so as I look at this, or as my clients look at this, this is the first step, just the first step in further consolidation in this fishery. We strongly urge you not to proceed down this path and not to adopt this, not to adopt this as your preferred alternative. It took me a long time to remember who said it, but John Paul Getty said, "The meek shall inherit the earth, but not its mineral rights." Well, maybe we could leave the meek some of the fisheries rights. Thank you.
Jeff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I said earlier, our coalition strongly supports this and hopes that the council will vote for this as a preferred alternative. If it does not, then the council will be silent on whether it supports capacity reduction. There's no other alternative in the document other than doing nothing. I would say that when you have a vessel owner with 10 vessels and he's going to get rid of 5, I don't know how you can say that's not capacity reduction, getting rid of 5 vessels. We've seen around the country and the world, the more vessels there are, the more pressure there is to relax conservation measures and harvest more. The vessel owners I represent are paying now for the overcapacity and the excess capacity. Obviously, a single vessel owner is not paying nearly as much as a multiple vessel owner when it comes to waste. We're paying for the waste and the excess now. With all the bells and whistles that we've spent almost 2 years on, with the power adjustment, with the mortality adjustment tax, whatever you want to call it, I think there are so many safeguards in the document now that the council ought to feel pretty good about all the work that the committee and the staff has done. Consolidation happened and is happening today. And if you don't identify this as a preferred alternative, it's going to continue. People that want to buy more permits will buy more permits. It's that simple. Those that don't, won't. And that's fine. But I just hope that the council will consider what we started out with almost 2 years ago, which is we want to reduce excess capacity. And I think, the staff ought to be congratulated for doing all this work, and I hope you identify this as your preferred alternative. Thank you.
Right. Hold on, Jim Ray, and then Jim Kendall.
Ray Stavish again. I would also ask the council to make stacking and leasing their preferred alternative. One thing the previous speakers haven't mentioned, this is a voluntary program. Nobody's forced to do this. I believe over time it will happen, but I think it's going to happen very slowly. And everything that's been put into this program is frameworkable. The scallop committee and the advisors were very careful that if they did make mistakes, we can change it. I don't see where this program could actually ever hurt anybody. Thank you.
Jim.
Well, frameworkable actions do occur all the time. The trouble is it takes all that time to do them. It's not an everyday occurrence where you're going to get something done in a short period of time. So, unfortunately, some of the explanations of how it won't hurt or how you can minimize the pain is not quite true. I really wish that the committee would, or the council would support this move to substitute, because I don't think there should be a preferred alternative, particularly in light of the issues that you're addressing here. I don't think you should have the authority to do this. Much like was described in Magnuson, that any issues that went out, regarding ITQs and such was supposed to go before a referendum. Everything in the world has been done to defeat that requirement, and this is one way around it. For the council or to take a position of a preferred alternative here, I think would be absolutely wrong. It sends the wrong message to the general public. And if you do have a weighted campaign to support it, then nothing you can do can be done to rectify it later on. Thank you.
Harriet?
Oh, I'm at the wrong button. Okay. Harriet Diedrichson, New Bedford, one permit, one vote. I would ask that all measures go out with equal weight, because when the public comes to these public hearings, they see something preferred, and they take the position, it's already decided, no matter what we say. It really defeats the purpose of your public hearing. It's a discouragement to people. Maybe that's what it's intended to be. Maybe I'm politically naive. But this is a big change. We're talking about scalloping here. My family's fished here since 1905. And this is a major change. You're never going to return from this. And Raymond's talking about frameworkable. I would hope it's not frameworkable, that anything will be frameworkable. But efficiency. The documents, efficiency is defined, and it was in one of the documents today, and I couldn't find it quickly. Efficiency is the ability of the fleet as a whole to catch. So those vessels you're going to get rid of, and as Jeff said, there's a lot of vessels in the world. Well, these vessels will be floating around in some fisheries or wherever, in other countries or wherever, that they take these permits off of, because you're talking about having it in permit history and leasing and all these things. So the efficiency is not going to be, there's going to be more efficiency because it's going to be fished on more efficient vessels. I listened to a proponent for this at the Oversight Committee, and they used the word efficient four times as they spoke. So you're not going to get rid of capacity. The capacity is the ability of the fleet as a whole to produce. And this, that fleet, when you take those permits off those less efficient, older boats, they're going to produce more. And in this, the way we're managing the fishery, you do not have an ITQ. I'm against ITQs, but in an ITQ, each person stands for themselves. And they only can bring forward what their history, and no matter what vessel they have, that's their limit of production. But that's not so in what we have here. We're all working out of the same pool in open days. And also the trips on Georges, which have not been included in the analysis. I know Demet looked only at the open days. Those days come outside with the yellowtail problems. So now they're fished open days outside. And now you have the yellowtail you're going to have to account for outside. So they become days, and those days have to be accounted. So those trips that we have on Georges, they're not quotas. You've got quasi-quotas here in the whole fishery and not even a full rotation. We've never really attained the full Amendment 10 projections of a full rotation. This amendment was supposedly, its number one objective was to conform to the ACLs and the AMs. The second objective of stacking, in my opinion, negates your first objective, and your first objective is primary. The proponents of this are saying there's not a rush, it won't be done right away. So I would ask that we put it in another amendment myself. And just concentrate here and let's see how we make out with the AMs, the ACLs, because the individual boat permit holders are going to pay the biggest price. And I certainly would ask the council members here to please use their better judgment and put this out equal and not non-preferred if you're going to send it out, and let the public speak to it on an even basis. Thank you.
Peter.
Thank you. Peter Hughes, Atlantic Cape Fisheries, Cape May, New Jersey. A couple of things. Owning multiple boats is not a bad thing. Somebody owns 10 boats, you know what? More power. You know, that's their God-given right in these United States of America. Vertical integration, or a portion of vertical integration, is not a bad thing. If I own a boat and I learn to weld on my dredges and fix my dredges, I'm partially vertically integrated. If I own an ice company, if I own a fuel company, if I own a ship chandlery store, that's a type of vertical integration that kind of goes hand in hand with owning a boat. Because people are very independent and work on their boats and try to do the best that they can for their boats. Taking that same example of owning 10 boats not being a bad thing, those 10 boats are tied up to the dock for 2,800 days a year, a boat day, a vessel day. That's overcapacity in the industry. That's what we're trying to eliminate. We don't want to send these boats to the shipyard every 3 years. We want to get rid of steel. We want to stop paying electric bills. We want to stop paying our fuel bills on these boats that are tied to the dock, having to paint them, having to sandblast them. And I would hope that you would keep this as it's written without the substitution in the amendment. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Ronnie Enixon. I'm a fleet owner, and I've been an advisor for many, many years. And through the process, I've been involved years back when we were trying to do a consolidation. We were told to wait, so we waited. And then we talked about having sectors for the yellowtail bycatch allocation back in Amendment 11. We were told to wait. Wait for the next amendment. Wait for the next amendment. Okay, we waited. Here it is. Amendment 15, we talk about it. Did all this work. There's a lot of adjustments involved. I don't see it being a real problem against a single boat owner. And we started out with one captain per boat. The days got down, and that became one boat per captain plus another boat shared with another captain, so it became three boats with two captains. Now we're down to two boats per captain. And I have one captain who's asking for more time to go fishing. And I've had several single boaters or captains on the other parts of the ports asking for more work. So my question to you is, how long are you going to wait? How low you want the allocations per vessel to get down to a point when we finally decide it's time to have some kind of shift of allocation? Because, frankly, this process takes time. We already near two and a half years. Years ago, it used to take about 18 months, 2 months, I mean 2 years to get an amendment. Now, we're pushing close to 4 years. So how are we going to wait until when there's a really interesting buyer, widespread of the whole industry, to get something in place? So I am against this motion. I think this should be a preferred alternative to allow stacking leasing. Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to bring it back to the council. I think we've got the flavor. Anything further? David?
Yeah. The reason I made this motion to substitute is that when we send something out as a preferred alternative, it sends a message to the public. The message is that the council is very serious about doing something, and this is what we probably plan on doing. If you don't like it, come and tell us how to tweak it, but we're still going to do it. I want this to go out with no preferred alternative because I want to hear from all the public. I don't know whether I want to do something or not. And I'm only hearing from the same people. Every time we have had a meeting on this subject, we hear from the same dozen people, some for, some against. But there's a huge number of people that are going to be affected by this, and I haven't heard anything from them. And those are the people I want to hear from. And I'm afraid that if we send this out as a preferred alternative, that those people won't even bother showing up because they'll figure it's already a done deal. Why should I go? And those people are the 250 people that are potentially going to lose their jobs. We haven't heard from them. And I really want to hear from them. And I think the only way we're going to do that is to send this out with no preference. So I hope you'll vote to send it out as with no preference.
Pat Kirkham.
Yeah, I disagree and I'm opposed to the motion. We identified a problem in this fishery. The committee and the council spent a long time identifying alternatives to address that problem. And I think the right thing to do is to put it out to the public and say, this is the problem we've identified, and this is what we've identified as the potential solutions. I don't think we just throw it up in the air and see where it lands. I really think it's the fair thing to do to the public.
Okay, you ready for the question? The motion to substitute. All those in favor, raise your hand. 6. Opposed? 6. Motion to substitute fails. Back on the main motion. Anything further? Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. 11. Opposed? 1. Motion carries 11-1. To you, Sally.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's one more committee motion related to preferred alternatives. Also within the section on to address excess capacity. So I'd move on behalf of the committee that alternative 3.3.2.2.1 be the preferred alternative for fishing power and mortality adjustment for stacking and leasing days at sea. This motion passed by a vote of 6-0-1, and the advisory panel also had a consensus statement related to this, which read that if stacking is approved in option one for the fishing power alternative, if stacking is approved, option one for the fishing power alternative is the preferred. So
the advisors were recommending that this alternative, although they did not have a recommendation on stacking and leasing, if that was recommended by the council, then they had the statement that they would want the council to select this option with the fishing power adjustment as the preferred, where any vessel can stack with the appropriate adjustments for fishing power and mortality.
Council. Anyone in the audience on the motion? Back to the council. Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Eleven. Opposed? Abstentions? The motion carries 11-0. Sally?
Yeah, I'd go back to Deirdre for a discussion, further discussion of the analysis.
In the interest of time, unless people have different thoughts, there are no other committee motions to recommend preferred alternatives. In a similar way, we basically ran out of time at the last committee meeting, as Sally mentioned. So I do have a slide per alternative left in my presentation for the remainder of these, but I will not go through them unless people feel strongly that they have in their mind a preferred alternative to recommend at this point. Really quickly, it's the overfishing definition, the several limited access general category measures are the next few slides, the EFH section, two options there, RSA, there's a dozen or so, and changing the fishing year to May 1st. There's analyses described in here, again, for the ecological and economic expected effects of these different things, but there's no committee motion. If any of these are issues that you think are worth identifying, we can do that, or if you want me to go through them all. The only thing I do think we have to do is there are two outstanding issues that identify later in the slides, one related to a general category measure to split quota from your permit, and then the CFA issue that came up before. I think people wanted to hear what the specific clarifications would be to that section. So those two things I think we should do today before we leave, and I can do that first. or if there's any other preferred alternatives. I don't want to rush it, but I am seeing people leaving and so forth, so I just wanted to throw that out there as an option. I can go through the two outstanding issues at this point that the committee did not wrestle with, that we did after the last committee meeting. I did some staff work about them I can tell you about. Or if there are any other preferred alternatives for the other measures that the committee did not have preferred options for.
I'll ask the council members, are there items that you want to offer up as preferred on the issues we haven't touched on? Seeing none.
I'll just take you to slide 36. This is something just after the last committee meeting that I believe still needs to be clarified related to the second bullet there. There's an alternative that I explained before that would allow limited access general category quota to be split from the permit, and then that quota in turn could be sold to another vessel with an LAGC permit or to another CFA or permit bank, whatever you want to call it. So that's the alternative that exists with the two options, but we haven't clarified what the intent of who we're talking about. We have two sets of limited access general category IFQ holders. Some are general category permits, and some are limited access vessels that also qualified for a limited access general category IFQ permit. Keep in mind, they get separate allocations. They get their allocations from separate pools. One is 5% of the total catch, and one is 0.5%. And it just needs to be clarified with this motion who you're going to allow this splitting of quota to occur on which boats. I believe the intent originally was focused on the general category vessels in terms of them being able to you know, fully utilize the transferability that was given to them in Amendment 11. I want to remind you that the limited access vessels that qualified for an IFQ permit were not given the authority to lease and trade. They were not allowed to do that. If we don't clarify this here, I believe it probably may conflict with what we did in Amendment 11 in terms of providing that ability to the limited access portion that qualify for this, which is fine, but we just have to clarify that and then justify it in this document. But I don't think the committee or the council has been specifically clear on who they're talking about, if we are restricting this to one group or the other or not.
D, is there a problem with including two options in the DEIS?
I don't believe so. I don't know. I think we just haven't thought about it. I don't know if it's necessary to have two, but it isn't a problem. It's just, I think, more an issue from the agency's perspective, perhaps, because you might start mixing these pools, if you know what I'm saying, in that, you know, if everybody can start splitting their quota, can you only then rejoin the quota within the limited access pool, or can you actually start mixing the 5.5 together?
My issue is we're not going to resolve that today and have none of the data in front of us, so why not put them both in, and then the council will vote on the one that makes the most sense.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move to include two options in the document, one to allow limited access vessels that also hold general category quota to split that quota from their permit, and a second option not to allow.
Is there a second? Seconded by Mary Beth. Sally?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think this is good for discussion. I think it's important to consider also in the context of the evolving consideration of what community fishing associations can do and how individuals who may or may not have an interest in using the general category portion of their permit suite for themselves, but may have an interest in providing some kind of seed for a community fishing association to do so, to let them do that. So it expands the opportunity for that. That's one of many reasons why this might be something that's worth considering, even in light of the original intent of not allowing leasing or trading of the general category quota held by limited access vessels. So that's one reason why I think that this is an important option to have in here, but then also put up, as Paul suggested, to have both alternatives for consideration.
And I wasn't thinking of that rationale when I seconded the motion, but this is very different than leasing for the limited access vessels, and the impacts are totally different. We're really talking about small amounts of quota for a fishery that is desperate for small amounts of quota to try and make themselves whole. So it could help, and I don't see why we shouldn't include the options at this point.
Anybody wishing to speak against it? Anyone in the audience wishing to speak against it? Back to the council. Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. 11. Unanimous. D, Sally.
Thank you. The other issue is the Community Fishing Association. Earlier today, it was mentioned that there are a few outstanding issues, and it seems as though people wanted to learn more about what those are and how we plan to address them before this is submitted to the agency, so I can quickly highlight that. The alternative is described on page 80 through 85 of Document 2 on Community Fishing Associations. It's a pretty long background about what these groups mean, what they are. This slide summarizes it's a nonprofit group that would hold quota and or permits. Again, that's two options that are within the document, that it may be restricted to just quota, and there's also an option to allow these CFAs to hold quota and permits on behalf of a community. The CFAs would then in turn lease the quota to existing LAGC permits, and the intent would be that that would probably be at a lower price than it's fetched in the normal market, since this would be coming from donations made through a nonprofit to reduce that price and make it more available to general category participants within the CFA. There's a few pages about different definitions and qualifications and details that would be related to these groups. The intent is included that these groups should not be retaining or holding on to the quota and not leasing it out. So that's kind of mentioned in the section that, of course, there would be the intent that it should be harvested and not just held for conservation reasons. There is an accumulation limit clarified of 5%. And again, these would only be harvested by existing LAGC permit holders, and they would be bound by all other restrictions in the plan. This slide summarizes the impacts. I'm not going to go over those. They're included in the document in terms of what we expect some of the impacts to be on the resource and the fishery. These are the outstanding issues that I just want to point on, and hopefully if you agree with our idea of how to clean up these sections, you could maybe without objection just agree that those changes be made to the document, and I'll do that between now and when it's submitted. So of the dozen or so issues that the agency mentioned at the last committee meeting, as well as at the staff meeting we had on Tuesday, there are four, as I mentioned, that are, I guess, worth noting. And the first one is related to some terms that are brought up on page 81, I think. Excuse me. Sorry, page 82. So on page 82, there's a section about geographic designations and community affiliations. And there was concern that it's not really clear what a community is, and it's not really clear what it means to get substantial support from community members and governing jurisdictions within that area. So in order to address this, the committee, when they were talking about these groups, basically the two paragraphs that are there was our best guess of being able to define what a community would be, which is basically a single coastal town or small number of coastal towns geographically or economically interconnected. Not very specific. That was on purpose. And I'm going to, or the idea would be to include a bunch of examples of what types of communities would qualify as examples and explain the intent that it's, it could be more than one town, but the intent is, you know, some sort of regional dependence related to a certain area, and we would give some examples to help clarify. The concern was, what's a small number? You know, that could be 50 different towns. So anyway, adding some examples and intent there. There was also concern about, well, what does it mean? How would the agency know whether or not these groups got substantial support of a community or not? Again, we would include some examples of what substantial support could be. For example, getting written support from the council of that city or town, from different community leaders and so forth. So it's basically just clarifying with it through example. Would hopefully address enough of the concerns raised for number one. The next issue comes in up with clarifying the participants. This was a little confusing at the committee level. The next paragraph gets into participation requirements. And to be clear, this section will be changed so that participation is clearly linked to the people that are allowed to harvest the quota only. It's going to describe the people that would be allowed to hold quota, lease quota from a CFA, as well as harvest it. And that would be more limited than what's here right now. It would say things more in line with community residents who have permits in the LAGC fishery. It would be very defined to be fishermen with commercial fishing permits. There was confusion in the section because it was trying to also cover the types of investors that could possibly be parts of CFA, and it seems that it would be more clear if we focus the participation requirements on who can harvest it and the council stays out of the issue of who can invest in a CFA, which is more linked to under how this group would be approved as a nonprofit, and the council document wouldn't at all in any way get involved or describing in who can invest in a CFA. So that was the plan for addressing the second confusion that was highlighted by the agency in terms of the participation section. So we would make that change. The third thing would be to clarify that these applications of CFAs to the council and agency don't have to necessarily be in a specific action. Our sectors are, and that's because the sectors, ultimately, sometimes the sector can affect the overall allocation and impacts on the fishery, whereas these CFAs would not in terms of, it would just be a leasing mechanism primarily, and, you know, it wouldn't really matter to the rest of the fishery how many people were in sectors and how many were not, and they wouldn't be pooling their qualifications in any way. So we would just be clarifying in here that there wouldn't have to be a certain action to approve these types of measures. It would happen outside of the regular action schedule. And we would also clarify, though, that there would be certain deadlines. The agency was uncomfortable that the deadlines were not specified in here, so we will go ahead and do that. And the suggestion from them was to use the same deadlines that we have for sectors in terms of when applications would have to be received and so forth. The last issue is to clarify that the council on the next page, the last page, I'm sorry, page 85, there's two sections about program evaluation and organizational evaluation. This part, the agency was uncomfortable that this evaluating is not specific in terms of what. Okay, so what are we going to evaluate? What are the standards? And it doesn't really give specific examples, so we were going to include those and then modify that overall the council should evaluate the CFA program in terms of how they're going and how they're working every 3 years or probably a little less restrictive, you know, 3 years or whenever it works with council priorities, something like that. Whereas the individual CFAs themselves would have to report to the council every single year, and they would be evaluated on an annual basis, and we would include what's missing right now are examples of what would be evaluated, and we would make that more specific with things such as the number of participants in the CFA, the amount of CFA harvest that's controlled by that, the amount of quota controlled by that CFA, and how much of it was actually harvested. That type of a report would have to be given to the council, and we would include specific points that would have to be presented to the agency for this evaluation on an annual basis. So those in our discussions were the four primary sections that would really need to be much more clear than they are right now in order for this to be able to go out to the public and be specific enough in terms of the agency knowing what they in fact would be evaluating in these applications and reviews. So if people are comfortable with those and entrusting that we would update this section before it's submitted, then that would be everything for CFAs.
Mary Beth?
I think I'm comfortable with the approach that Deirdre has laid out, with just, you know, putting some definition in for these items and moving it forward.
Jim?
I'm also comfortable with allowing the staff to flesh this out.
Any objection? No objection. Mary Beth?
Yeah, and if everybody's good with that, could we maybe take a 10-minute break?
Yeah, take a quick comfort break unless there's nothing left to discuss.
The only thing I had, we technically had on the agenda, was an update of timelines in Framework 21. You're not making any decisions about Framework 21 today. It's in November. The document is included in the binder in terms of the alternatives. PDT is going to meet probably several times, as well as the committee, before November. I was going to walk you through a little bit so you know what's in the framework and what is not. And we do have two motions from the committee related to future joint groundfish scallop framework items related to yellowtail that are on the last slide of my presentation.
Yeah, I think it's important that we do what's left of us, gets an update on Framework 21 and those yellowtail issues as well. Before the break, Dr. Pierce?
Yeah, there's also some discussion about EFH. Maybe I missed it, but in the presentation, there is a question posed, council motion on preferred alternative for EFH. I assume that's also to be addressed by us this afternoon.
You must have missed it. Yeah, we kind of blanketly asked the council if they had any preferred motions for any of the other issues that the committee did not identify, and none were raised. So we would bring the document out with two options for the EFH section, neither identified as preferred.
I didn't realize that question was asked in the context of, EFH. And so I do have a motion to make on EFH alternatives at the appropriate time.
Let's take a break. Sally?
Yeah, I don't have anything else in terms of preferred alternatives from the committee. We were, before the break, we were just discussing if we were going to move on to a motion to approve the draft EIS with the modifications discussed today, but I think there were some potential further discussion on preferreds from the council.
Okay. Just as a general statement, I'm getting a little uncomfortable with 10 council members identifying a preferred alternative, but it is what it is. It's a quorum. There's 12 of us. There's a quorum, so go ahead. Dr. Pierce.
Okay, Bob. Section 3.4.3, measures to address EFH closed areas. If EFH omnibus amendment 2 is delayed, the rationale for this particular alternative is on page 86 of the amendment, and that indeed is what it says, that the amendment is the Habitat Omnibus Amendment is delayed, and I believe it is delayed. Therefore, it's appropriate to have this alternative in here, and the alternative to it is no action. Well, looking at the very well-done table showing the alternatives for the different sections and the ecological and economic impacts, That's document 9B. You know, I read those descriptions of the different impacts, and I'm convinced that it makes a great deal of sense for us to have 3.432 as the preferred. So I would move that the preferred alternative for section 3.4.3B. Modify EFH closed areas to scallop gear under Amendment 10 to be consistent with MS Amendment 13.
There's a second. Seconded by Mary Beth. Discussion. Anyone in the audience? Gibb?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gibb Brogan with Oceana. We oppose this motion, mostly on the looking at the calendar and the process that's written out in the amendment right now. It seems as though this alternative in Amendment 15 will simply redesignate that area, and then it will take Framework 22 to reactivate that area for rotation. And I guess this is more of a question for Deirdre. I'm just asking if this alternative goes through, it will then take Amendment Framework 22 to reactivate Closed Area 1 access. Is that correct?
Well, yes. In Framework 21, we would not really seriously consider accessing closed area 1 because we still would be limited to the smaller area. When framework 22 is initiated, if this is in fact approved and implemented by the council and implemented by the agency, we would, through the SCALP PDT process, potentially identify it as an access area when we would consider reopening it for 2011.
Okay. My point is that I think that the EFH process is going to be done before Framework 22 goes into effect. So this will redesignate that area in closed area 1, but then the EFH process is going to look at all of the EFH areas. And then we'll go back and be looking at Framework 22. So I think that this is a moot point at this point in the process, because before this area would ever see any fishing activity, the EFH process is going to run its course. So I don't know what this accomplishes. We have real concerns about the analysis that supports it, the NEPA analysis that goes along with it. There hasn't been a whole lot added to this since 2005. A lot of that, we believe, is stale analysis that's in here supporting this action. So it's going to take a, we believe it takes, will take a lot of work on the council's part, on staff part, both by the SCALP staff and also the EFH staffer, who is already overworked doing the SASE process. And I don't think it makes sense to move this one forward. It doesn't get us anywhere, and we'll just have to repeat the process after the EFH process does its course. So we oppose this one. Thanks very much.
D.
Just quickly respond to two parts. We didn't really go through the analyses yet. There is recognition that most of the analyses in here so far is from previous actions. But in talking with the Habitat staff, the SASE model that Gib just mentioned is not complete, and we can't use it yet. It has to be reviewed by the SSC, approved by the SSC, and that is intended to be approved and available before this council has to make final decisions on this amendment before June. We can't include it right now because it's not approved yet, but my understanding is that the SSC will be reviewing it between now and June, in which time we could use some updated results from that process, which is more advanced than, what we have to date. The other thing is I'll catch myself later, but the reason you want to maybe do this, Gib is correct, this could be completely overhauled by Amendment 2 to the omnibus. It's true, all the areas are going to be reconsidered, but if in fact that is delayed, which has happened, this would be there for 2011 if for some reason the omnibus amendment is not effective by March 1st, 2011.
With the SASE model being incomplete, we'd ask that if this moves forward, that at least the document be updated to reflect the best available information. There's been a lot of habitat science that's been done since 2005, and this analysis absolutely needs to be updated if it's going to move forward. There was a literature review done by the Habitat PDT that should at least be incorporated in this, and that was complete. That was a precursor to the SASE model. So we think that this is inappropriate. Thanks very much.
Drew?
Thank you. Drew Minkiewicz, Fishery Survival Fund. As was mentioned, this is trying to put in place the boundaries that you already had put in place in 2005. It was overruled in a court case brought by Oceana on a technicality that it couldn't be done in a framework, it had to be done in an amendment. You've already approved this. As much as we would like to see the Habitat Amendment move forward in time to make this moot, I don't have the confidence that that is going to be the case, and it's time. We need access to this area to fully prosecute our rotational management scheme in order to save bottom and have less habitat impact. So we strongly support this motion. Thank you.
Okay, back to the council. Anything further? David?
Just a question, and so is going to be further analysis? I mean, there's going to be some kind of an update to the question that was asked. People are nodding their heads, so I'm comfortable.
Anything further? Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. 9 opposed, 1 abstentions. Motion carries 9-1. Anything else?
I don't have any other committee motions unless and if someone has something else on a preferred alternative. The only other thing would be a motion to approve the draft EIS as modified by the motions today. I assume there's something to that effect up there.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dave Gaethel. Discussion. Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Ten. Opposed? Abstentions? One abstention. The motion carries. 10-0. One abstention. D.
The second agenda item for this September Council meeting was an update on scallop timelines and Framework 21 measures. The timelines is Document 1, and the framework is Document 3. In the interest of time, I'll just update you. We did inform the Executive Committee as soon as the decision was kind of made between the PDT and the staff about timelines, and it's related to delaying Framework 21 final action from this council meeting today until November. There were a variety of reasons why that was suggested. I think you probably went over them during the Executive Committee report, so I won't repeat them, but the timeline shows you that by shifting the final decision from September to November also shifts the likely implementation of Framework 21 from sometime before the fishing year to sometime after the fishing year has started. We don't know exactly when, but let's just assume sometime in May. There obviously would be a strong push to do it before June 15th when our access area is generally open on Georgia's Bank. So that's the update on the timeline. And very briefly, the Framework 21 document is pretty far in development at this point, document number 3. Very quickly, just to remind you, the background and purpose section of the document, starting on page 9, there are several primary management issues that will be addressed. This is a framework for one single year. We generally do them for 2 years. We're doing it for 1 year this time because under ACL management, we wanted our first management year, 2011, to start a new framework, basically under ACLs, rather than have a framework 1 year under ACLs and 1 year not. So this is a single-year framework just for 2010, and it would essentially set the specifications for that one fishing year. And it would also comply with the first reasonable and prudent measure, if you recall from the terms and conditions in the recent biological opinion for sea turtles. This council spent a lot of time on this last year, and this would be an action that would help the agency comply with the measures required from that turtle biological opinion. So those types of measures are included in this document. I'll briefly summarize what they are. The second objective of this framework is to adjust the area rotation schedule and also consider a new scallop access area rotation area within the channel on Georgia's Bank. This is the same area that the PDT identified in the last framework for potential closure. The council did not select to close it in Framework 19. Strong recruitment has shown in surveys again in that area, even stronger than before, and it still is definitely ripe for consideration. It's well beyond the Amendment 10 standards in terms of a potential new area, and we would expect definite increases in yield from closing that portion. Again, it would likely close for 3 years and then reopen as a scallop area rotation, and I'll show you a chart with the boundaries. The last objective would be to include minor adjustments to the observer set-aside program. This was identified as an issue back in April when you initiated this action with two specific things to look at. Since that time, other issues with the observer set-aside program have surfaced. Nothing has officially been included in this framework to address some of those concerns, but certainly the PDT has several members that are thinking about those issues and working on them concurrently. So the next section of the document really goes through just some background information about area rotation. I want to take a second to go over the no action section because we got some questions about this from the executive committee, and the public has been asking a lot of questions about this too. The no action alternative on page 11 is clearly the no action would be just if all the measures from this fishing year roll over to the next fishing year if nothing is done in this framework. Those are described in the tables in terms of day at sea allocations and so forth. The second no action has to do with the general category IFQ program. If most of you are probably aware that the IFQ program is not fully implemented yet. We did hear from the agency at the last committee meeting that they do anticipate getting through all of the final appeals later this fall and to begin sending letters out to vessel owners with their final qualification criteria and so forth for the IFQ program with the full idea that it would be implemented by March 1st. However, because the council will potentially have to make decisions about this framework before, we know that for sure, we do have to include an option in case it is not implemented in time. If you recall, if the IFQ program is not implemented by the start of a fishing year, that is considered that we are still in transition to IFQs, which would mean the general category fishery would stay under a quarterly hard tack with a 10% allocation of the total catch compared to a 5% allocation under an IFQ. So that does have ramifications for the limited access allocations as well, so we will have to consider a totally separate alternative if that is in fact the case. Hopefully by the November Council meeting we will have a better update, more accurate update from the agency in terms of how close they are since it is 2 months from today. The next alternative under no action would be recognizing that this framework will be implemented late. And when a framework is implemented late, there are risks of confusion and allocating different amounts than ultimately would be allocated once the framework is implemented. So this section describes the different measures that would be considered if the framework is implemented late, which it will. So there is a list on page 14 that describes the different things that we would account for, any additional days at sea or IFQ or things like that that could be potentially harvested before this framework could be implemented. So these, we included a section just like this in the last framework because the last framework was implemented late as well. So these are pretty similar in nature to that, and that's the no action section. I'm not going to go over too much the next few pages, get into the actual scenarios that the PDT is considering for allocations for the fishery for the 2010 fishing year. Very quickly, we have to consider four because we have a new closure. And so we have definitely one alternative with the area being closed in the channel and one alternative without it. And the reason that we have two additional ones on top of that is a lot of the new work we've done in the amendment about setting our ACT at a certain overall F. We've learned a lot during that process in terms of our uncertainties, and there's arguments within Amendment 15 that the overall F for the fishery should be 0.24 rather than our status quo of 0.20. And without getting into all of that today, that's basically the reason why there are four different overall scenarios for Framework 21. With all of those different options come different expected catch levels, different days at sea allocations expected with each of those. Those are described in the next few pages. And we are, this related to the yellowtail discussion, there are some ideas the PDT has if, in fact, the scallop fishery is not allocated enough yellowtail in terms of the different allocations that we expect. We do have some ideas about ways to creatively, you know, move the fleet around, if you will, to avoid some of those, reaching some of those yellowtail ACLs. So those are described in the table on page 19 in terms of trying to access different areas at different amounts to take advantage of different yellowtail stocks. Okay, general category. Again, this section is, we're going to have two sections depending on whether the IFQ is in place or not. The PDT recommends the Northern Gulf of Maine hard tack stay the same We do not have new information about the resource in that area to suggest that it should change. In general, we're looking at 4 access area trips for 2010, which is one less than this year. And there'd be 2 in Elephant Trunk, 1 in Delmarva, and 1 in Nantucket Lightship. So just to remind you, those are the access areas that are most likely going to be open in 2010. The consideration of the new area starts on page 20. That describes the information about what is required to consider a new area rotation under the Amendment 10 schedule of area rotation. There's a little information about the area, and then on page 22 is the figure. Figure 3 outlines the boundaries of this proposed new closure. It's in waters between Closed Area 1 and Nantucket Lightship. It is a very productive area. It's an area where a lot of the open area fishing takes place currently, as well as other fisheries. And it's also overlaps with portion of the habitat, one area of habitat particular concern that's under consideration in the habitat amendment. So that has also come up during the process that it does overlap with portions of that boundary. But that is the area that is under consideration for closure. And depending on whether that is closed or not, greatly affects the rest of the allocations in the different scenarios. Because if you take that off the table for the next few years, you are going to see effort in open areas moving to different portions of the fishery and so forth. So the next big section is the last section starting on page 23. And this is the first time we've had to comply with a turtle biological opinion in this way. And if you recall, there's a little background there about what the term and condition is, but very quickly we are required, or the agency is required, to limit the amount of allocated effort within the waters on Figure 4 on page 25, basically all of the Mid-Atlantic, south of Long Island. They are required to limit the amount of allocated effort that can be used in that portion of the ocean in the scallop fishery by 2010. It doesn't say by how much, but the standard would be that we can't do it more than a minor impact on the fishery. So we have 4 alternatives under consideration for the turtle biological opinion, and it would be a restriction on the number of days that an individual can use during a certain period of time, and we have 2 different time windows under consideration and 2 different areas within that Mid-Atlantic portion. Then we also have a restriction on the number of access area trips, again, during 2 different time windows. We're also considering a seasonal closure for Delmarva access area. There will be 1 trip in there in 2010. And the last alternative would be to reduce possession limits in these 2 Mid-Atlantic access areas as a way to limit the amount of effort that could occur in the Mid-Atlantic. These are 4 different strategies. The next step would be to determine through the PDT analyses whether these cause more than a minor impact on the fishery. I don't have that. That's what the PDT is going to work on in October and determine whether or not these qualify as RPMs. Again, if they are expected to have more than a minor impact, technically, we would not include them as measures to comply with the RPM because they would be beyond the bounds of the RPM. And the 2 observer set-aside alternatives are on page 28. And it would be to prohibit vessels from not paying for observers. There has been an issue in recent years with some non-payment. So this alternative would hopefully help alleviate some of that by not allowing vessels to get their permit the following year until they take care of unpaid balances. And the second one would be to limit the amount of compensation that general category vessels can get on observed access area trips. There were some concerns in recent years of some loopholes there, and this alternative would hopefully address that and limit the amount of compensation a general category vessel could get in an access area observed trip. Those are the alternatives in the framework. I'm hoping we don't have any additions. There are 2 motions from the committee related to the next framework, not Framework 21, That would be for fishing years 2011 and 2012.
Questions from the council on Framework 21? Mary Beth?
Yeah, just one question. In the turtle issues that you're trying to develop measures for, did the service provide any baseline? I mean, if we need to have reductions, what are we reducing from? I mean, particularly with the fishery, the rotational manner of it and how it changes over time, is there a certain baseline that we have?
No, we had that pretty lengthy debate about this last year because originally there was sort of a comparison, reduce effort by such amount compared to other fishing years. I think the council successfully argued back with the agency that that is really problematic in an area rotation type of fishery to have a baseline years and reduction amounts. So there is no standard in terms of how much we're trying to reduce effort. The standard instead is that you want to limit effort as much as you can up to a point that you don't have more than a minor impact on the fishery. The PDT has some ideas about how to help identify that more than minor. If you recall, ours, it's described in here. There is a section on more than minor. And the PDT's input on this would be that we have the same arguments we made last year about how to help identify that more than minor threshold, and it has to do with how much effort you're going to shift and impacts on F. So we are going to have the same recommendation for you this time, that the same approach be used for identifying more than minor.
Frank.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I mean, not that it's going to happen, but I know we've been talking about it for the last 15 years, changing the start of the fishing year. And it was said that this framework was for 1 year. If we vote to change the fishing year, what happens between the time? Does this framework carry over for the interim period, or what would happen in the period of time?
So that would be for April and April of 2010. There's nothing in here to talk about that.
So if we change it, we're going to have to do something there, or that's something we have to consider in the amendment? Yes.
I think you could do it in Framework 22. In the next framework we initiate, arguably we'd want to have it implemented by March 1st, 2011. So we could, in that framework, make it a 15-month year instead of 12 or something like that.
KD, let's run the Framework 22.
Yes, that's all I have, just the last two committee motions related to Framework 22. I think I need it back again, yeah.
I have a motion to make on behalf of the committee to recommend that the council consider addressing the 10% limit on yellowtail bycatch in access areas in Framework 21 or 22, depending on staff resources. That was a committee motion. It passed by a vote of 8-0. And as we've heard today, there's probably not the ability to get this done in the context of Framework 21. But if you look at the timeline, you can see that there's the potential to address the yellowtail allocation in time for implementation of Amendment 15, March of 2011. So I'd suggest that we simply modify the motion, unless there's objection, to refer only to Framework 22.
Is there objection? Shouldn't be objection. But all right, so can you modify the motion to strike Framework 21, and I'll ask for a second because it's no longer a committee motion. Is there a second? Jim Fair, discussion? Dave Gaither.
I guess the question is, consider addressing, how you plan to address it? You're going to address it, or you're going to say, hi, yellowtail, how are you? I mean, you know, what are we going to do? That's what I want to know.
Well, I mean, we had a partial discussion on that, and we went from one extreme to the other. I don't I don't think that we're going to, this afternoon with 11 members, determine how we're going to do that, whether it's simply going to be a change in the allocation or if there's going to be an opportunity to do something that's that really provides the kind of flexibility that might solve the problem in terms of allowing yellowtail quota if there's a desire or, you know, willing seller, willing buyer on either part to flow between the ground fish and the scallop fishery, or dealing with bycatch mitigation measures. I think there's a whole suite of ways that this could be addressed, and the committee put forward this motion, recognizing that there are a lot of approaches that could address this, but not wanting to say, you know, gear modifications are the way to do it, or change the percent allocation, or you know, allow a yellowtail sector to form, or change, you know, on and on. I think there are a lot of workable ways that could that this could be addressed. And the committee didn't want to list them out, having had a pretty detailed discussion on many of those fronts.
Okay. That was my question, whether I should amend this to say, to have the committee provide a range of alternatives, but it sounds like that's what you intend to do anyway, so that's what I was curious about. I wanted to make sure there was going to be a kind of like a laundry list of possibilities that we could implement. If that's what you plan to do, then I guess we don't need to. It's already in the intent of the motion.
Paul?
I think what's embedded in this motion is that you need a framework 22 is geared towards setting specs for the next 2 or 3 years for scallops. And that starts in April, and your final vote is in September, April of 2010. So we're really ahead of the game on what we want to put in this, because the scallop committee is working and so is the groundfish committee. But this is basically saying that the council agrees to look at the 10% yellowtail cap in that framework. Now, I don't know in terms of priorities what the groundfish committee is going to be doing in 2010. But, you know, this takes a lot of work, and the specs is going to take a lot of work. So this is saying we're going to look at it in framework 22, but it takes two committees to look at it. So that's basically it.
Well, that was going to be the second part of my question. Because this is a framework, is there any limit on what you can look at for alternatives because it's a framework and not an amendment? For example, you know, this idea of setting up some kind of a commodity exchange for yellowtail or something. I don't think you can do that in a framework, right? So there are some limits to what can be done, just so everybody's aware that it's going to be kind of more of the same old type of things that we've done in the past, that we can't really put any new ideas in here because they're not frameworkable.
Anything further? Jim Fair?
Before we vote, I think framework 21 came back again. We need to get that out of there.
Thanks. Anything further? Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. 11, unanimous. Anything else?
One more committee motion. I'd move on behalf of the committee to request the council to initiate a joint action to consider moving the access area opening dates in the groundfish closed areas as early as May 1st to reduce yellowtail bycatch. It's a committee motion passed 6-0-1, and we've had quite a bit of discussion on this, so I'll leave it at that.
David?
Yeah. What is the relationship of this particular motion to previous comments by the plan development team about availability of most recent scientific information from the surveys that are needed for us to make changes in, you know, well, now the ACLs? I recall there being a great deal of discussion about that. last year, the year before that, I forget when, time flies by. But it seemed to me that there was a decision made by us not to change the date because of availability of information. So did the committee address that, and is it an issue?
We did, and it came up the advisory panel, too. I reminded the advisors and the committee that we don't have a lot of new information that would support changing this date. You know, it was picked for a bunch of reasons, I understand, but to be after the peak spawning period for some stocks in that area. We don't, the fishery hasn't been in those areas earlier than June 15th, so we don't have a lot of observer data to support changing the date. It could be argued we could look at observer data in areas right around them. Again, it's going to be a limited amount of trips that we could look at. Certainly the committee wants us to do this and the industry wants us to do this, but there may not be a whole lot of data to go on to actually support changing the date. But certainly we could look at recent observer data in areas around it to start and see if it would support that, in fact, the bycatch rates are lower in those earlier times. How that affects spawning is still a groundfish issue that they would have to comment on if they have concerns about it affecting the peak spawning periods. But in terms of the catch, which is where the scallop committee is coming from, they're looking to put the fishery there when the catch rates would be lower.
Paul Howard.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Another way that I think the council could look at this is instead of initiating another action, is just task the Scala PDT to gather information to present to the council before Framework 22 starts on April 10th. And if there's enough information in front of the council to see that, again, it's going to be weighing spawning to protect groundfish versus if there's evidence that you can reduce yellowtail bycatch in those months. So you need science to make that determination. So if you have it by the April council meeting, then you can vote to keep it in Framework 22. If not, then you can say there's not enough information that supports it.
Anyone else? Jim Fair.
I know we can't use anecdotal information, but the information that we did get at the committee meeting was very compelling. I wish Rodney was still here because, you know, people like him have a good idea where the yellowtail are and when they are there. The later we put that fishery into this area, the worse the bycatch will be. And I think every fisherman in the group in the audience agreed with that statement. So I think we need to work in this direction. If we can get more from the surveys or from the observers, I think we should do it as quickly as possible.
Pat Kirkle.
Thanks. I'm going to oppose the motion. I think it's too bad that it's so late and so few of us here and we're so tired, because I do think it's an important question. But I can remember this discussion and this debate when these dates were implemented, and it was actually one of the first times that the council took sort of a holistic approach to looking at problems, where they looked at the bycatch information, the spawning information, the habitat information, the scallop information, brought it all together and picked a date that that maximized sort of all of those competing concerns. So if there's no, you know, if there doesn't seem to be very much new information, and certainly that's our understanding, especially on the spawning issue, then I don't think that this is a good use of staff or council resources. I could agree to the kind of thing that Paul suggested, but that does take a lot of resources. So I'm going to oppose the motion as it stands.
Dr. Pierce?
Yeah, I would move to postpone this motion until the next council meeting when we discuss scallops.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dave Gaethel. Ready for the vote? All those in favor of postponement, raise your hand. 8, 9, opposed. One. D. Sally, anything else?
That's all I have, Mr. Chairman.
D. Nothing else? Jim?
Based on the handling of the previous motion, I would ask that the council direct the staff to look back and see what circumstances dictated or set the stage for the access to the elephant trunk area when we had to sit back and consider the opening dates because of fluke. I don't think there was any more scientific data available to us than what we're asking for here. I think you have probably the same wealth or lack of wealth of information to make that decision. But the industry strongly supports that you consider changing that date for the described reasons, that it will lower yellowtail bycatch. I mean, we know this. Service may not know this for sure, but you can definitely look back and check some of the landing records on that, I'm sure. But I don't think we had much more information, like I say, that we based the access periods to some of the other closed areas or even access into that particular area. Don't believe it was for spawning yellowtail. It was for high concentrations of yellowtail, which start accumulating in that area and move to the westward later in the year. Thank you.
Ron, is it on this issue? Okay. Dee or Sally, anything else? Anything else under scallops from the council? Ron?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just 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 thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just